I'm Jenny Nevinson, and you are listening to the Minder Podcast.
Welcome to episode 29 of the Minder Podcast in association with Minder.org. I am your host, Paul Stenning. In this episode, we bring you a tribute to a man without whom Minder would have looked very different indeed. What would Minder have been without Dave the Barman? A very underrated part of the main trio which made Minder famous, Arthur, Terry and Dave, Glyn Edwards, was by all accounts very similar to his character. He liked a pint for one thing. So we will cover the life and times of Glyn Edwards, drawing together from as many sources as were available. If you had tried to find out more about Glyn, you may have thought there was not too much out there. I know I did. Despite his many TV, film and theatre performances, the man himself was a bit of a mystery. Have you heard all this before? I hope not. But even if you are a treasure trove of knowledge when it comes to Glyn Edwards, this is the first audio tribute that covers it all, I think anyway. And I can also reveal that I have an exclusive interview within these revelations with Glyn's former wife, Christine Pilgrim, an actress herself. So Christine contributed several parts in this tribute, as you will hear, and that alone, I think, gives it an exclusivity which we've not seen before. So grab yourself a Vera and Philharmonic and sit back to reminisce over the wonderful Glyn Edwards. Benjamin DeHaven, in Confessions of a Self-Help Writer, wrote, "Bartenders, true bartenders, are like the priests of a secular realm. They hear the sins, bless the children, and offer medicinal comfort." Glyn was actually the middle name of John Edwards, who was born in Penang in Malaya, now Peninsula Malaysia, on the 2nd of February 1931. He was 9 before he met his father, and this was also the age when he met his stepmother. His father was a rubber planter at the time of his birth, though they later ran a pub, the Rose and Crown, in Salisbury during the war. It is worth noting that Glyn had to help out with collecting glasses and cleaning up in the bar. What a grounding for the future proprietor of the Winchester. Glyn's real mother had died just after he was born, and his father died in 1946. Very impressionable events for a young boy. He had spent his early years in Malaysia, but when he was still a young boy, he was taken to Southsea in Portsmouth to live with his grandparents. During this time, he read Arthur Ransome's Swallows and Amazons, which gave him an instant passion for boating. Living by the sea helped to further his interest in the water, and sailing would become a lifelong interest. Later, he would live on many houseboats, and was good friends with Warren Mitchell, a fellow boating enthusiast. Yes, Alf Garnett was a boating enthusiast. Edwards also owned sailboats, including one he named Minder and another Winchester, which had a permanent mooring at Thames Ditton. Glyn attended Salisbury Cathedral School, as well as the private Claysmore School in Dorset, where Beatles manager Brian Epstein also attended. Epstein was just a few years younger, so they would have been in the school at the same time. As I mentioned, Glyn's father had died in 1946, when he was just 15, the same year he left school. "I left school at 15. I was a total dunce," he once said. "I was talked into sugarcane farming in Trinidad, but had little enthusiasm for it, and I was helping to manage a country club in Port of Spain, with acting a sort of hobby, when I came back to London, aged 21, and joined the Central School of Speech and Drama. That led to me forming my own small touring company." When Glyn managed the country club, incidentally, he would also compare calypso shows, an unusual but useful grounding, and it was apparently here that he became interested in acting. At the Central School of Speech and Drama, Glyn oversaw the production of a new play every week, but they had to be careful about the content of productions. A friend of his sent over a play titled Call of the Flesh, back in the times when theatre content was strict. This was a risque play. Edwards had started to perform himself, and it was whilst on stage during Call of the Flesh that he was spotted by renowned theatre director Joan Littlewood herself. Her workshop would become famous, and it should be noted that she turned down both Sean Connery and Michael Caine. Call of the Flesh became a very successful play, and it was also where Glynn met the slightly older Eutha Joyce, then Needham, in one of her earliest roles. Later he appeared with her in the 1963 film Sparrows Can't Sing, although he was uncredited. Also featured in the title role was one James Booth, and there were smaller roles for Terence Plummer, who we mentioned in the Looking for Mickey episode, and other future Minder guests, Victor Spinetti, Roy Kinnear, and George Sewell. Glynn would say, "We first met when I, all arrogance at the age of 23, took a company out on tour with a play called Call of the Flesh. I hired Eutha and we hung out together. We married in 1958 and worked for Joan Littlewood's renowned theatre workshop, staying with Joan through some 40 plays, over 8 years and a play on Broadway. We divorced in 1968 and Eutha became a big star in teleseries like George and Mildred. She remained a divorcee and she died in 1980, aged 53. She was a lovely lady. I got my first West End break along with Eutha in Lionel Bart's musical, Things Ain't What They Used to Be. It was a huge hit running there for 2 years. I got a year's work out of it, as the Razor King, a heavy Cockney part, and Max Bygraves had a big hit record with the title song. Edwards played a dodgy gambling club owner, with Barbara Windsor among the Good Time Girls. Originally opening in 1959, it transferred the following year to the Garrick Theatre. Some of the words from the stage show were too rude, with songs having to be rewritten for television. Edwards was now being trained professionally as an actor with Joan Littlewood's Theatre Workshop at the Theatre Royal Stratford East, and he appeared in its productions of The Good Soldier Sveck and two plays by Brendan Behan, one of which was a big hit. When the play had finished, Glynn received a reply from one of his many auditions for television work. It was 1958, and Edward's first real television appearance would be for an ATV series about Sir Francis Drake. He had appeared as First Constable in The Heart Within the year previously. Glynn starred in 4 of the 26 episodes of Sir Francis Drake, which starred Terence Morgan in the title role and Jean Kent as Queen Elizabeth. Michael Crawford, in what was his first job, played the ship's drummer. It was early days for TV. We never ever put to sea, Glynn would later say, which must have disappointed him, by the way. The ship was made of cardboard and they wobbled the cameras to make it look like we were sailing. There were minor connections in this series. In one episode, Glynn starred alongside Nigel Davenport, who would later appear in Why Pay Tax as Ray. They also acted together in Madame Bovary in 1964, and they would in fact appear in several productions together over the years. Another episode of Sir Francis Drake saw Glynn act with Frederick Yeager, who played Inspector Klingman, the Jerry in the Minder episode in. In early 1963, Glynn received the offer of a role in Joan Littlewood's stage show, Oh What a Lovely War, but at the same time was an opportunity to appear in a big-budget movie, Zulu. Filmed in Africa in the summer of 63, it was written into the actors' contracts that they were not allowed to have sexual relationships with anyone who was coloured. They didn't see a woman for 2 months of filming when suddenly 50 gorgeous Zulu dancing girls came onto the set. As Glynn would say, he thought to himself, remember the contract, remember the contract. The world premiere for Zulu took place in London on the 85th anniversary of the Battle of Rorke's Drift.
In the 100 years since the Victoria Cross was created for valour and extreme courage, beyond that normally expected of a British soldier in face of the enemy, only 1,344 have been awarded. 11 of these were won by the defenders of the mission station at Rorke's Drift, Natal, January 22nd to the 23rd, 1879. Frederick Sheese, Corporal, Natal Native Contingent. William Allen, Corporal, B Company, 2nd Battalion, 24th Foot. Fred Hitch, Private, B Company, 2nd Battalion, 24th Foot. James Langley Dalton, Acting Assistant Commissary, Army Commissariat Department. 612 John, Private B Company, Second.
Zulu became a huge success, making 7 times more than its budget upon the initial showing, and remains a popular film 60 years on. I've never regretted opting for Zulu, Glyn later recalled. I was the big hero, not Michael Caine or Stanley Baker. They had me play Corporal Allen, winner of the Victoria Cross for his heroics at Rorke's Drift. The historical Corporal William Allen may have been a hero, but incidentally he was not a model soldier. He had been reduced in rank to corporal for being drunk on duty. The real Private Henry Hook, on the other hand, was a model soldier. His fellow soldiers remembered him as a good soldier who didn't drink alcohol. In the film, Hook is played by James Booth, who would later show up in 2 Minder episodes. You can hear Michael Povey mention how much he wanted to work with Booth in our 6th episode. 1964 became a big year for Glyn, as he also appeared in the first classic serial on BBC Two, Madame Bovary, where he played Nyree Dawn Porter's coarse husband. He also performed in 2 of Ken Loach's earliest works, Diary of a Young Man, also in 1964, and 3 Clear Sundays the following year. This was the time where actors had to keep working to earn a decent living. The salaries of the big stars from films in the 60s, and even 70s, pale in comparison to today's figures. Glyn would admit some years on that he had earned 10 times as much money from, later in his career, advertising bran flakes as he did from the movie Zulu. But then once he started acting, he was never out of work. He was in hundreds of productions, many of which were for multiple episodes or showings. I suppose I'm the envy of many an actor, he would admit. I hardly knew what it was like to be unemployed. In fact, I only had to sign on once at the Labour Exchange. But with typical humility, when asked if he had made a great deal of money, he acknowledged, "I'm comfortable, yes, but I'm not a big movie or telly star. I'm not what you would call Mr. Megabucks." He also later appeared in another renowned TV commercial, this one for Rich Tea Biscuits. Glyn's second wife, Christine Pilgrim, told me, "Glyn was very like his character, in Minder, insofar as he was a very convivial, outgoing and hail fellow well-met man in public. However, he described himself as a bit of a loner. He often quoted and lived by the maxim, I'm as good as anyone else, and anyone else is as good as me." One of our early dates was aboard his 32-foot sailing boat called Nyree, named after Nyree Dawn Porter, his wife in Madame Bovary. Most people were confused as to how to pronounce the strange spelling, which was N-G-Y-R-E, but Glyn was adamant that the sailboat should be spelled the New Zealand way, in honour of his friend, who spelt her professional name N-Y-R-E-E.
Right, Tom. Still 2-1 on Reynolds. 11-2 against Straw.
That'll be 10p, offer.
Dave, you are getting very small-minded. And I am not the only person who's noticed it, either.
Yeah, how does it work, Arthur?
How's what work?
How can you put a bundle on one bloke and still keep the odds short on a favourite?
Oh, it's easy with a fight like this. I mean, everyone's going to back Reynolds, aren't they? I mean, he is the man. I mean, if Muhammad Ali was fighting tomorrow, you'd back him, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Of course you would. So you want a bundle on Straw, you spread it around. pony here, century there, different bookies, you know.
It's a rotten business.
I suppose you got your bundle on him, haven't you?
Couple of bob. Well, I mean, after all, you did tip me the wink about Willie's weakness.
That's lousy, Arthur, and you know it is.
It is business, my son. It is dog-eat-cat in this world today. I mean, I often wonder to myself, what has happened to all the happy, smiling bus conductors? Or the service you used to get? I mean, whatever happened to flying boats?
Meanwhile, all those punters out there who've put their money on Reynolds are gonna lose it, right? Because they think the fight's kosher.
Boxing kosher? Oh, Terry, leave it out.
Oh, yeah, go on, go on. Have a good laugh. Everyone else does. Boxing, blammy. Oh, no, no, no. Bent as a fiddler's elbow, dear. Yeah, all right, there are a few crooks in the game, right?
Oh, yeah.
We accept that. But the geezers who get up there in the ring and they do it, they're OK. They're not Einstein, but they're OK. They're straight, Arthur. Do you remember what that is? All right, so they may not have the brains to make a mint of money. No, they leave all that clever stuff to intellectuals like you and Barney Mather. But these geezers, they get in the ring and they still believe that boxing is the noble art. They think, for some strange reason, there's something honourable about playing the game, doing it by the rules. They do it. And for them, and for some of us, it's kosher.
Ooh. Well, I'll go to our house. What has got up his nose, I would very much like to know.
You're a real diplomat, Arthur, I'll say that for you. Yeah, one of the old school. You could export hot pastrami to the Vatican.
All I said...
All you said was too much.
Wait, hey, not enough. Come on, you're 10p light.
Cover charge.
No, no, wait, look, I didn't even ask for that.
Force it down here.
Matter with everyone today.
By now it was clear that Glyn Edwards was a dependable and consistent actor who could slot into a wide variety of supporting roles with ease. He was not leading man material, but that did not matter. He did have a likability and steadiness, which held him in good stead for all manner of roles. Should also be noted that not all of his parts were affable, good-natured chaps. He could play sinister or even creepy when the role demanded. Witness his two episodes of Please Sir as Mr. Dix, or especially lob the gamekeeper in 1973's thriller A Place to Die, although it must be said that in the latter most people were sinister, very wicker men. If Glyn was not playing the friendly bloke next door or one of the spooky townsfolk, he quite often played a policeman or a criminal. In one way, you did not quite know what Glyn you were going to get, which was perfect when it came to playing a series of eclectic parts. His first real recurring character came in the mid-60s, when he spent 9 months in The Newcomers playing the union organiser. The programme aired for 430 episodes altogether and featured Vanda Godsall, who we also mentioned in the Looking for Mickey episode, as she played Freddie Baker's mother. In 1967, Glyn appeared in the film Robbery, about a raid on a Royal Mail train, which of course was based on the Great Train Robbery from 4 years earlier. The film starred several future Minder guests, including Rachel Herbert, James Booth, George Sewell, and Terence Plummer again. Glyn's former wife, Christine, told me, he loved to tell a story about when he was on set with the movie Robbery, when a copper who was playing himself approached him cautiously. Glyn thought he was going to ask for his autograph, but the policeman said, "I'm sorry to mention this, sir, but your road fund license is 2 months out of date." Glyn rarely took himself too seriously. Glyn was to feature in a number of popular TV series throughout the remainder of the 60s and into the 70s. These included The Saint, The Avengers, The Professionals, Softly Softly, and Steptoe and Son, where he appeared alongside his good friend Harry H. Corbett. There were also 4 episodes of gangland drama Spindo, where once again he starred alongside future minor guests Rachel Herbert and George Sewell, not to mention the Sweeney's Garfield Morgan, who played DCI Frank Haskins. Glyn had also appeared in 10 episodes of Dixon of Dock Green, one of which was the very last episode of its 432 shows. We must also mention that after Zulu, there also followed other famous Michael Caine films that Glyn appeared in, including the Ipcress file as the police station sergeant, and most famously Get Carter. In the latter, Edwards played the Geordie Albert Swift, an old acquaintance of Jack Carter. Carter, played of course by Michael Caine, stabbed Swift to death outside a Newcastle betting shop. The reason was a rather strange one, harking back to Edwards' sinister abilities, as he had appeared in a porn film with Carter's daughter. This is not for real, of course. In 1972's Burke and Hare, Glynn played William Hare, with Euther Joyce as Mrs. Hare. The film itself, one newspaper called, an unwise mix of period horror and smutty comedy, which is probably about right. Interestingly, Glynn's then-wife, Christine Pilgrim, appeared in the film as Rosie. This meant that Glynn's ex-wife, Euther, played his on-screen wife, while his real wife was also on set. They were on good terms. Between 1973 and 1978, 23 episodes of Some Mothers Do Have 'Em were produced. Glynn had worked briefly with Michael Crawford in the past, and he described Frank Spencer himself as being a pleasure to work with, saying he was incredibly talented and a very hard worker. Glynn starred in the very first episode of the sitcom, as well as a further two episodes as Mr. Lewis, the very straight man to the dysfunctional Frank Spencer. Interestingly, the first episode of the show featured future minor guests Royston Tickner, Milton Johns, and Glynn Houston. Edwards had a knack for appearing in very popular series, as well as screen time with legends of both comedy and drama. No wonder, as he could do either quite easily. He spent five episodes in the comedy Lucky Fellow with David Jason, for instance. Christine Pilgrim told me, before Glynn's involvement with Minder, he used to say people recognised him, but couldn't always place where from. They'd say things such as, "Do you work in the bank or the post office?" He said they knew they'd seen him through some sort of frame. He always replied to them, "I lead a precarious life as an actor. You might have seen me on TV." I think, Christine says, it demonstrates Glynn's humility. Shortly before he entered the world of Minder, Glynn played Jack Crawford in all 14 episodes of the children's drama The Paper Lads. He was a very dependable and reliable actor, and as far as we are aware, was Leon Griffith's first and only choice for Dave the Barman in Minder, although it almost never happened. One day Glynn's agent called him up telling him about a new show called Minder. George Cole was in it, he explained, and they needed a barman. Glynn read the first script and turned page after page before he finally came upon the Winchester Club scene where Dave the Barman would set up a VAT and be told to put it on the slate. His first Minder appearance would consist of just a few lines. Glynn rang his agent to express his lack of enthusiasm. His agent spotted something, though, and he persisted. "They are paying you usual money, Glynn," he told him, "and you aren't working that particular day either, and the part may grow." Grow it most certainly did. Whether it was Leon Griffiths or casting director Weston Drury Jr., who saw a future for Dave the Barman in the show, is not quite known. But Glynn Edwards was not aware that anyone else was offered the part. Drury Jr. had previously cast Glynn in the Ipcress file, and he was on board from the very first episode of Minder, continuing in his role for 55 episodes. My feeling is Drury knew of the future episodes for the show and could see Glynn Edwards in his recurring role behind the bar. How right he was. Weston Drury Jr. passed away in 1994, the last year of Minder.
I know it's hard to believe, Ray, but I always used to envy Arthur in the old days. He was quite a pull. When he was sharp, he had cash, a motor. The women used to flock round.
When he gives me aggro, I so much as see the same girl twice.
Oh, well, he never used to see. He's always too busy ducking and diving. Didn't want to get tied down.
Yeah, what happened with Artie then?
Ah, oh, a legend, Ray. She swept him off his feet. He never looked at another woman since.
Till now.
You can't get him, Dave. He won't take any notice of me.
Yeah, what if he says he wants 5 minutes more?
Oh, well, he can't have them. Not unless he wants to do the return leg solo.
He's not there.
Did what?
And there's no sign of Madeline either.
You better go and get him.
No way, Dave. You're his best friend. You go.
I'm sorry, Ray. There are certain things a mate's prepared to do.
Yeah, but I'm family. Think of the trauma.
Oh, good afternoon.
You've been shopping?
Yes.
Is that the normal practice over here?
What do you mean?
Where's Arthur?
I haven't seen him.
Glyn once told The Express, "Playing David Minder was my biggest TV role. Amazingly, it was just one day's work initially, and seeing the script made me realise why. There was only a couple of lines to say. My agent persuaded me to accept it, explaining the part may grow, and of course it did. One strange thing about the character is that he didn't have a surname initially." He added, "I said to the director, I can't just sign as Dave, I need a surname. After much deliberation, we chose Harris." As director for the first episode was Peter Sasdy, a Hungarian by birth who was not Dennis Waterman's preferred director, it is likely Harris might have been suggested by Glyn. It sounded English enough. Englishman Christopher King was brought in to direct the second episode. Glyn claimed he wasn't offered a big deal, and it's easy to see why. When Minder was first created, there were no grand plans for multiple series, although there was enough material for one or two. Dave, as Glyn said, grew from nothing. Arthur Daly needed a base. He needed a confidant. The Winchester was his base away from her indoors and all of the stresses and strains of the modern entrepreneur. It should be said that Dave was not just a confidant for Arthur, but also Terry. In fact, over time he becomes just as much of a friend to Terry as Arthur. He is loyal to both despite their occasional disputes and separation. Dave is literally salt of the earth and trusting to a fault. By series 3, Glyn was ready to sign on for Minder, for however long it might be broadcast. He was literally part of the furniture, even if it was movable. The bar itself was on casters, so that a whole film crew could get behind it. Glyn was 6'1", which may not have been too obvious at times on screen, but this was significantly taller than both George and Dennis, possibly another reason why Dave often leaned forward. The main reason was due to a slight hearing impediment he had. Leaning forward was a way to make sure he heard everything properly and became his signature pose. When he was a teen, it was said, Glyn suffered some hearing loss due to a love of shooting. As an adult, he loved reading the Hornblower series, C.S. Forrester's 10 novels about the fictional character Horatio Hornblower, a Royal Navy officer during the French Revolutionary and Napoleonic Wars. Glyn would even invent a board game with old battleships of varying kinds. It never went as far as the marketing stage, sadly. Edwards loved working with George Cole, who he described as marvellous to work with, and Dennis too, who he described as a bit of a lad, whose first question in the morning would often be about whether he had seen the football the day before. Glyn would say, "Working with George and Dennis was great fun. George was totally focused on the job. He'd come out of his caravan almost as Arthur Daly. He didn't want to get involved in funny stories, just do the work and return to his caravan to complete a crossword. Both were brilliant and knew their business." Glyn acknowledged that it was a hard act for Gary Webster to later follow Dennis Waterman, but felt it was clever to cast a different type of role. Ray Daly spoke French and appeared to be more intelligent than Terry McCann, and he could still pull a bird. Some of Glyn's favourite guest stars who appeared in Minder were Billy Connolly, who he even didn't mind sharing a dressing room with, Roy Kinnear and June Whitfield. Glyn featured in 95 Minder episodes altogether, and he was there right up until Series 10. Could Minder have continued even longer? Glyn hinted this was so. Other feature-length specials had been suggested, and even though he was now into his 70s, George Cole would still have played Arthur. However, politics behind the television scenes and a lack of finance meant it never happened, and so the very last episode for both George Cole and Glyn Edwards was The Long Good Thursday.
Frankie Connor?
Yeah, went on the news earlier.
You know that geezer that was ringing Arthur and he was getting me to play?
That's him, Cranky Frankie.
So what's his connection with Arthur?
Well, a few years back, it was before you hooked up with Arthur, he used to give Frank a bit of work, you know, a bit of this, a bit of that. But one day, he sent Frankie along to chaw back a motor what some punters hadn't paid up on. This punter and his brother just happened to show up as Frankie was playing it. When they complained, he gave them a right boshing. Yeah. Got nicked for ABH and copped the 7 stretch.
You're joking, 7?
Yeah. Well, mind you, it probably would have been 5 if Arthur hadn't gone over the top, giving him a character reference at a trial.
You don't think that's why he rung Arthur, do you?
No, no, Frankie thinks the world of Arthur. He knew Arthur never sent him round to bosh anyone. But he's proud to do bird for him, that's what he said. Like I said, he is a bit of a, you know... Well, I reckon that's about it.
Yeah, but Dave, does Arthur know that Frankie's had it on his toes?
I don't know.
Over the years, David developed into more than just a confidant at the Winchester. In certain episodes, he was a huge part of the storyline, and on many occasions he ventured beyond the Winchester's confines, sometimes appearing to back Arthur up in court, or drive when necessary, lending money and so on. In Broken Arrow, he helps Arthur out of a bind, and drives down to the darts competition Arthur has created, just to give him his money. And still, the Winchester remained the base that every character would ultimately return to, including police officers, guests who weren't members, but Dave allowed to drink anyway, and even harboured criminals, who he gave space to in the floor above the bar. Glynn, the regular actor, could not help but benefit from his association with Minder. As he would say, "I can't be anything other than fond in my recollections, can I, when it's still part of my life after all these years? Financially speaking, anyway, it's being screened 3 times a day, 7 days a week, on satellite channels Paramount 1 and 2, and I get royalties." If you try to think of another recognisable television barman, you might think of Mike in Only Fools and Horses. The character is relatively similar to Dave, in that he is part confidant, part wry observer. Despite Mike's jokes at others' expense, he can be trusted as a mate. But can you think of another recurring television barman? I certainly can't. Not one that came before Dave. He was the originator of the part, and there has still been no one like him. Although these days you won't get that because there are hardly any pubs, never mind regular barmen. Mike the barman, incidentally, did not appear in Any Fools until 1983, a full 4 years after Minder's beginning. And as others have pointed out, Only Fools and Horses perhaps only really existed because of Minder. Though they would become rivals during the mid-80s in terms of viewer ratings, and though Only Fools has become the overall better-known show, Minder was the original. Even Only Fools and Horses writer John Sullivan acknowledged that his premise for his show was taken on because of the success of the first series of Minder. That in itself is interesting, by the way, because as we have mentioned before, Minder was not an instant success. Although you're here because of Minder, and many people would instantly refer to Glyn Edwards as Dave the Barman, it should be said that throughout his time in Minder, Glyn had numerous other acting projects on the go. And it was not just television roles he took on. In 1986, he starred with his old friend Barbara Windsor as a Cockney couple in the Radio 2 sitcom Living with Betty, which was filmed before a live audience. It was only in 1988 that he played his last role other than Dave Harris. His final film role was for the Demi Moore movie The Seventh Sign, where he played a newscaster, funnily enough, for a Hungarian director. After this, he would ease into retirement, performing only in Minder for the last 6 years of his career. His work did slow down slightly during the 1980s, an indication of his love of Minder, as well as the regularity of the role. Thankfully, Glyn Edwards took the role of Dave Harris on. I mean, can you really imagine Minder without him? Testament to this is the fact that, as we mentioned earlier, he would appear in 95 episodes of the show, second only to George Cole in terms of number of shows. To put that in context, Chisholm appeared in 24 episodes. For Glyn, the nearest he came to other recurring roles was in 20 episodes of The Main Chance and The Paper Lads for 14 episodes. Dave was truly a one-off. Finally, finding enduring success with Minder, after a long career as a jobbing actor, Edwards made the most of his late fame, and for a fee would attend a wedding or barbecue, and serve behind the bar. He was married 3 times, with his first wife being famed comedy actress Eutha Joyce. He married his second wife, Christine Pilgrim, in the late 60s. Christine told me Glyn was a good man. She said, "We had 2 sons. Sadly, our first boy died 6 weeks after he was born. Very traumatic. Glyn wanted no funeral because of his experiences as a child, but I needed closure." Many years later, when I worked at a historic site in the Caribou Mountains in BC, Canada, we had a spiritual for baptism and burial for my son. it went a long way toward healing. Thankfully, Christine and Glyn would have a second son, Thomas, born in 1971. She recalls the period when she was pregnant with Tom, saying, "We spent Christmas aboard the Steel Canal narrowboat Sunflower that we had built to our specifications. My equally pregnant girlfriend and her husband join us. We had to bone the turkey to fit into the tiny oven aboard the lugger. It looked like a giant frog. We broke ice as we chugged along well below the 6-knot speed limit. Paddles of ducks skated and slipped across the ice in search of titbits. In full sail, we two women opened the lock gates while the two men manoeuvred the boat into each lock in readiness for the climb upstream. After Tom was born, we sometimes lived aboard Sunflower and travelled to Glyn's work via canal." Christine also told me, "We toured southern France with 3 different boats. The first was a small day sailboat called Tombo, Glyn's nickname for Tom. Tombo 2, T-double-O, was bigger, so much so that Glyn underestimated its length on the trailer and didn't get it through an intersection before a car crossing from another direction knocked it off its trailer into the road. It delayed our arrival home by several days. Tombo 3 was a smaller motorboat." Christine also told me a nice few stories about their trip to Ethiopia when Glyn was filming Shaft in Africa, which would have been over the Christmas period of 1972. Christine told me, "Glyn insisted that 1-year-old Tom and I accompany him. He travelled at the back of first class at the company's expense, and Tom and I travelled at ours in the front row of second class. Glyn passed goodies through the curtain that separated both classes throughout the trip." Tom, she says, was inoculated against every tropical exotic disease imaginable and caught bronchitis. So he didn't want to eat the crisps, peanuts and other Western snack foods that I'd packed in case he couldn't stomach the local food. I gave them instead each day to the children standing outside the church. As a result, I became friends with the poorer Ethiopians and we were invited to eat and sing with them, a beautiful example of the generosity of the people. Thomas Edwards is doing very well, a successful IT man living in Chicago. To further show Glyn's humility, I should tell you that Thomas doesn't have any memories of his dad being on set anywhere. He never went with him. His father took himself off to work as if he were going to the office. Glyn and Christine separated around 1980 and divorced because of irreconcilable differences a year or so later. Christine told me, "I moved to Canada in 1992. Glyn and I stayed in touch because we co-parented Tom. We socialised only occasionally, but always amicably. I got along with both of his other wives." Edwards would marry for the third time to Valerie in 1984. She would stay with him for the rest of his life. He once said, "I can break down my marital record quite neatly for you. 10 years, 10 years, and so far 20 years with this one. I suppose you could say that Val, who's not in the profession, and I have put all that behind us. We are enjoying life, living in Spain, with a house near Alicante. Val keeps me going." Shortly before he passed away, Glyn gave an interview to The Express, where he commented, "When Minder ended in 1994, I more or less retired, and haven't done much since. Nowadays I like relaxing, reading and going off for little walks. Valerie and I used to regard ourselves as old age travellers. We'd never sit still for long, and would frequently jump in the camper van and head off abroad. Sadly, I find driving too far a bit much these days. Even after all these years, I still get letters from fans about Minder. I guess Minder is timeless." Glyn Edwards passed away surrounded by his family, including his third wife Valerie, at home in Edinburgh, aged 87, on May 23rd, 2018. Writer Gary Bushell would later say, "The gruffness of his voice was tinged with warmth, and just like Dave, Glyn was easygoing and down to earth. I met him a few times once for a long boozy interview in a pub in Thames Ditton, near to where he moored his houseboat. He had two, one called Minder and the other called the Winchester." Jonathan Gibbs of Minder.org was lucky enough to meet with Glyn once. He told me, "I met Glyn in Gran Alicante in Spain in 2009. I believe he moved there near Alicante to live in the late 90s. We were on holiday and I had been in touch with his wife, so we agreed to meet. Glyn was a nice guy. I remember that I introduced him to horchata, which is popular in Spain. It is actually tiger nut milk, which I know sounds a bit weird, I remember feeling proud that I had introduced Dave the barman to a new drink. To be fair, Glenn was very humble and seemed as interested in me and my wife as I was in him. When he knew I was Welsh, he told me a few stories about his early days on the stage and how he had travelled to Ebbw Vale, where I once worked. Minder-wise, he didn't tell me much I didn't know. He told me that he had total respect for George and Dennis as actors. He said the second that George left his dressing room or Winnebago, he was Arthur Daly. I remember Glyn was very tall. I hadn't expected him to be as tall as he was. There is plenty of information on Glyn out there, mainly on the forum, that's the minder.org forum, about him living on a barge. There are some Minder outtakes on the Australian DVDs that show him on it. I do believe Glyn attended one Comic Con type event a few years before he died, but honestly I cannot remember. Jonathan also brings us a Minder related piece of Glyn. He says, I asked Glyn explicitly, had you starred in anything with Gary Webster before? And he said no. However, I think he is wrong. I do believe there is one scene in the 1987 Channel 4 TV film, Out of Order, where Glyn and Gary are in the same scene together. The film is a bit strange, but of course, Glyn plays a barman. If you want to see a review of this on the Minder site, I include the link in the description for the show. I will also add that the film included Don Henderson, Annette Badland as well, both of whom appeared in Minder, as well as Garfield Morgan. Thanks to Jonathan for his valued contribution. My immense thanks also go to Christine Pilgrim, who proofread my tribute and contributed very nicely, making sure that we had the warmth of Glyn Edwards. And thank you for listening.
I don't recall exactly.
Well, maybe that'll refresh your memory, Jacko.
I can't drink it, Inspector. It's too wet.
Don't waste time, lad.
No, I am allergic to wet tea, honest. Now, if I had one of them McVitie's rich tea biscuits.
Jacko, are you going to make a statement?
Yeah, I'll make a statement. A drink's too wet without one.
McVitie's rich tea. A drink is too wet without one.
Changed our local pally into a bowling alley, and things ain't what they used to be. There's Teds with drainpipe trousers and Debs in coffee houses, and things ain't what they used to be. There used to be trams, not very quick, got you from place to place, but now there's just jams. Half a mile thick, stay in the human race. I'm walking, they've stuck parking meters outside our doors to greet us. Now things ain't what they used to be. Oh, monkeys flying round the moon, we'll be up there with them soon. Things ain't what they used to be. Once our beer was frothy, but now it's frothy coffee. Well, things ain't what they used to be.
It used to be fun, Dad and old mum paddling down South End, but now it ain't fun. Never mind, chum, Paris is where we spend our outings. Grandma tries to shock us all doing knees up rock and roll. Things ain't what they used to be.
We used to have stars, singers who sung, and Dixie Melody, they're buying guitars, blinkety-plonk, backing themselves with free chords only. Once we dance from 12 to 3, I've got news for Elvis P.
Things ain't what they used to be. It's the